show.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to this Tuesday edition of The Horn. Head on RadioNetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid. I like to call what we do here Conversation Radio. This would be, yes, Titanic Tuesday. We sort of skipped Moran Monday yesterday, but we got a couple of Morans in under the wire before the program closed. This is Titanic Tuesday, so named for the Titanic intellects of the right wing. I'll remind you that Titanic Tuesday got its name via our buddy Jim, who recounted the story one evening of that Titanic intellect who is on the government-censored radio waves over in America's fifth smallest radio market, who declared that there are imprints of seashells in rocks, in strata in West Virginia as a result of the movement of the Titanic plates. I know, it's precious, isn't it? They're just so smart, those right-wingers. Lord God, I tell you what. I mean, done graduated sixth grade and everything. One of these days they're going to give that man a nickel squirter. You know, just like the conductor has on the trolley. He's either going to be a brain surgeon or a fry cook. He hadn't made up his mind which yet. Mercy sakes, it is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, however, and we have some examples of that Titanic intellect of the right wing hard at work here coming in the next few minutes and so on. A couple of program notes. One, The Horn exists and continues to exist because you make it exist. As such, on any given night, we need to raise about $100, a little over $100, just to stay ahead of the curve. So that means, let's say 14 folks at $10 apiece, 28 people at $5 apiece, 7 people at $20. It's not all that difficult. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, and the snail mail address is there, too. I will, under the tab Contribute, I will repeat it for you now here, however, in case you would like to just get the checkbook out and go to work. The mailing address is The Horn, T-H-E-H-O-R-N, you know that. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, you know, just like the president. PMB, personal mailbox, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, and the zip code is 25801. And a gentle reminder, please do not make checks or money orders payable to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid does not receive the money. The various and sundry providers that make it possible for the Horn to be here receive the money. It goes into our little bank account, and then Boss Man Wayne writes the checks. So that's how you get a check to us via snail mail. If you want to contribute by the PayPal button, that's easy. It's right there at headonradionetwork.com. And I will thank you in advance, because if this doesn't happen, there's no broadcasting in, you know, October. We are on a month-to-month basis here. And we have a lot of bills. And that's how we pay them, with your kind contributions. So we're looking for about $140 this evening. Hopefully that will happen, and we will just continue to go forward. It would be nice to stay with our heads above water all the way through the month of September, and that's what that does. And when you think about it, it works out to about a little less than 5 cents per hour of programming. Where on earth else are you going to find something that's less than a nickel? I mean, Jesus, penny candy isn't less than a nickel anymore. This is what pays the phone bills. This is what pays the toll-free charges. This is what pays the internet bill. This is what pays everything that makes all of this go. The account that we have to maintain in order to fix stuff when it breaks down. You know, the stuff that can be fixed. I'm constantly looking at this phone unit up here and thinking, oh my God, if that thing ever goes, we are screwed. So, there we go. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. That's where the PayPal button is. It's also where the Listen Live button is. That's the easiest way to listen to the live program. Just go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and click Listen Live. However, you can also get us through TuneIn Radio, through Stitcher Internet Radio, Tuner Internet Radio. Some of these are smartphone apps, which means you can take the horn with you whitherever thou mayest go, which makes us almost as ubiquitous as terrestrial radio, only uncensored. We can say here what needs to be said without fearing that the precious little ears of some right-wing child will fall off. Or nose. Who knows? You can get the podcast feed at whiterosesociety.org, and our podcast is also up at iTunes. No charge. See, that's what happens. When you support the horn, you make the horn possible for whoever cares to listen to it. And that is really, really special. That's, you know, they don't do that on the right wing.
By God, you want to hear it, you pay.
Right? Right. Another program note coming up this Saturday, another in the continuing series of American History Chats with Dr. Bill O'Brien and Professor Keith Lilly, live from the Irma Bird Center in Beaver, West Virginia. These are all, we have never carried one of these yet that I have not come away with something I did not know before we got started. This is a way to understand the history of the United States, so that when some right-winger says, well, you know, American exceptionalism means that Thomas Jefferson went to church every Sunday and beheld the miracle of the Mass. And we understand that it's not true, because we actually know document-based, primary source-based American history, thanks to the information going out via the PRISM West Virginia American History Series. The PRISM series has its very own Ustream channel. Just look up PRISM WV, PRISMWV, on Ustream, and you'll go right there. But of course, if you prefer simply to listen, and you don't have to have pictures, and you can picture stuff in your mind just as easily, you can always just go to the Horn stream, and it's right there for you as well. So that's what's coming up on Saturday. Saturday's going to be a very busy day. Ferg is going to sit for the ACT test, and then we will be doing the PRISM series that afternoon, beginning at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. This program, of course, and I was reminded of this last night, that I should probably mention this. This program, of course, is brought comes to you live every evening, Monday through Friday, at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. That means 3 p.m. Pacific. We're live. Of course, we're very thankful to our dear friends Mike and Kathy Malloy for allowing the rerun of this program to come on after Mike's show, which ends at midnight Eastern, 9 Pacific. And so there are a variety of ways in which people hear the program. I'm reminded to mention that simply because I got a call last night from someone who was listening and thought the show was live. But we had a lovely... See, I answer the phone off air, too, if I'm here. Sometimes I just feel like I have to run right out of the studio. But if I'm sitting in the studio and the phone rings, I answer it. And we have conversation radio even when there's no radio to have conversation on. Because what the Horn has been doing over the years is bringing people closer together and creating a sense of community that would not otherwise exist. And I think that's pretty special, and we have all of you to thank for it. So that covers all the programming bases, doesn't it? Yeah. Now, one other thing. After this week, there will be some on-the-road time. I'm not exactly sure how much of it will be on-the-road time. I'm still waiting to hear. But I know that I will be in D.C. on the 13th of for an event in D.C. on the 13th of September. And on the 14th and 15th of September, I know I will be in Wisconsin at the Fighting Bob Fest, which is terribly, terribly exciting. We'll be going out there and talking a little bit more about the toxic nature of mountaintop removal and the fact that those toxins can be expected to rear their poisonous heads wherever this kind of blasting goes on a large scale, and that has real impact for a place like Wisconsin, a beautiful, beautiful place like Wisconsin. Wisconsin people, tell me something. Do I have to, like, bring heavy weather clothing for September in Wisconsin, or is it just going to be another lovely day in paradise? Bear in mind, we're talking about Madison. I don't know. Just let me know, please. And I will take your advice when I pack the bag. So that's pretty much everything, and we can now jump into the meat of the program. Because we've got a lot of ground to cover. You know, of course, that this is conversation radio, so that means there will be ample opportunity for you to participate as well. Let's see, bring weather clothing, especially if you intend to be out at night. Okay. Benedict, you're not in Wisconsin. I don't know. Do I have the insulated stuff, Gore-Tex stuff? You get the idea. I told you a while back. Ray! I'm having trouble negotiating the various tabs that I have open on my computer, so I don't just sit here staring at the chat room or staring at the email, and I have to bounce back and forth. Ray! What time's the program on in Kenya, Bob? The president might want to listen. Yeah, or his relatives, or the brother. Let's see, how does Dinesh D'Souza's movie? The brother that he hardly acknowledges even exists. They are, of course, beginning the Democratic National Convention tonight. I guess the bourbon and booze and beans, or bourbon, blues, whatever bash it was last night, was a huge success. Of course, the blast email I got about it today, I talked about it a little bit last night, once again made no mention whatsoever of the only bill in Congress that would actually end mountaintop removal, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AHEC Act, H.R. 5959, with what which has happened with your good work bringing people on board as co-sponsors. You know, we're going to have to be persistent with the AHEC Act. One phone call, one email doesn't do the trick. I will just gently remind you that the Congress will be coming back into session next week. That's part of why I'm going to be back in D.C. And you might want to take that into consideration as you contact your member of Congress to get them to sign on. Contact them this week and then follow up next week. I'm reminded by a dear friend that you can also go to change.org and there is a bill there. There's a petition there you can sign in support of the AIC Act if you're into signing petitions. Change.org/petitions. Oh, dear, this is way too long. But go to change.org and perhaps look up AIC Act, and I bet it'll take you right to the petition. You can also go to the petition directly through AICACT.org, which is probably substantially easier because there's a direct link to the petition at AICACT.org. Let's see. Jenny with a note for me. Thank you. Wisconsin. It will be beautiful. I would pack clothes for the heat. Then just a light jacket at night. And some pants at night in case of bugs if you're out at night. I'm hoping to get there. I hope you do too, Jenny. I look forward to it. But I'm worried about that some pants at night in case of bugs. Jenny, are you telling me Wisconsinites don't wear pants during the non-buggy parts of the year? I mean, I knew Wisconsin was cool and everything, but wow. What time is it in Kenya? Dr. John, working the room, too. Hell, I had a bourbon and beans fest last night, too, and I didn't have to pay $500 a head for it. I know. I never did find any bourbon. I wound up kind of faking it with some iced tea, just like in the movies, where the cowboy walks up to the bar and yanks the cork out with his teeth and spits the cork and his teeth out on the bar and upends the liquor bottle. You ever tried to do that? It's not a good idea. The one where... Bloop, 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 bloop. I've never been able to pull that off. Mostly it's like, a little half ounce. Wow, smooth. Booze and blues, bourbon and beans and booze, I don't know. So we understand that it will be up to you to get the AIC Act passed. Thank you, Jim. Cautionary note, watch out for deer ticks, Lyme disease. Don't want it, I will. I will watch out for it. And, I'm getting the idea that I'm just going to stay in at night because I don't want none of that West Nile virus neither. So, like I said, it's Titanic Tuesday. And I kind of warned you that it's going to be nasty from here till Election Day. Hell, it'll be nasty after Election Day. You don't expect these right-wingers to lose gracefully. And God knows they won't win gracefully if they do that. Had an email earlier today from our buddy Tosh noting the possibility that maybe there would be, he said there is a fourth alternative, namely President Romney, Republican House, Democrat Senate. That's terrifying, too, to have to rely on the Democrats in the Senate not to cave in. Because, see, I remember when the Democrats in the Senate had a majority and they caved in and gave us Sammy Alito and John Roberts. Citizens United? Anybody? Anybody remember Citizens United? Yeah, that happened because Democrats caved in the United States Senate and confirmed those two strange, strange, strange men. Let's see. Where to start? Daggummit. Sorry, just got it. Got to get this thing. Green news just came in, and I wanted to make sure that we've got it for... Yeah, here we go. Anyway, I told you it was going to be nasty. And it is nasty. and these right-wingers are going... But understand that this is just another voter suppression technique. Okay? You don't have to be given a literacy test or a poll tax in order for the right wing to succeed in keeping people away from the polls. They have an entire arsenal of means of keeping people away from the polls. Some of it is, admittedly, related to things like voter ID laws. But there are other means. And one of those means is by making the process so odious and so filled with venom, filth, and hatred that moral people of decent conscience simply turn away from the concept of participating in the selection of government out of pure, almost animal repugnance. Because the Republican Party understands that they always succeed best when people don't vote. That's why they don't like for people to vote. And consequently, this kind of stuff is going to proliferate as we get nearer November.
Hey, honey.
Okay, so wait a minute. What we have here is a couple that we are to understand lives in a house where they are apparently surprised to see each other, and someone is always playing piano in the background. You remember that great early Elton John album, Don't Shoot Me, I'm Only the Piano Player? Or the old joke, Don't Tell His Mama He's a Lawyer. She thinks he's a piano player in a whorehouse and still has some respect for him. Yeah, this couple, the woman in which is looking with real concern on her face at some newspaper while a guy plays piano in the background. I seem to recall it had something to do with a tinny piano playing in the background. You wore blue, the Germans. You wore white, the Germans wore gray. But she's concerned, and apparently he's surprised to see that she stayed the night. Hey, honey! Right? Yeah.
Hey, honey. How are you?
Fine, I guess.
Well, when the stay starts in that tone of voice, you know there's going to be trouble. Fine, I guess. Wouldn't it be nice if you would attend to my needs once in a while, Harold?
Hey, honey. How are you?
I mean, they're a happily married heterosexual couple. That's what we're supposed to understand, because this comes from a pro-Romney super PAC, otherwise known as political cesspool, that's connected to evangelical so-called Christian Gary Bauer, who wants to protect their little unborn babies. And he's all angry at the homos, too. Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a tough morning there in tinkling piano land. You know, the little jar of pasta on the counter, and I don't know, maybe there's some beans and some sugar, and what the hell are those things? Dried cantaloupe? I don't know.
Hey, honey. How are you?
Fine, I guess.
What's going on?
You know, when I say something like that to Agnes and she says, fine, I guess, I know I have done something wrong. And so I immediately just apologize. Whatever it is. Because whatever it is, it's my fault. And I find that we get along much better if I promptly announce that I am completely filled with penitence for whatever it is that I have misdone. This guy, though, I don't know. I guess he just lives with this perpetually clear conscience, or he's never done anything to piss her off. She sounds really pissed. I mean, she's a fine, I guess. You know, at 7 in the morning? Fine, I guess.
Hey, honey. How are you?
Fine.
You know, he's kind of smug, too. How are you? How are you? Like he already knows how she is.
Hey, honey. How are you?
Fine, I guess.
What's going on?
Well,
yeah, tell us. What's going on? I don't know. Maybe he's being more cagey about it than I am. Oh, really? You're fine? You get? What's going on? Because, I mean, everything of it, because this is video, of course, so you have to rely on me. But everything about this woman's body language just says the world is going to hell in a little leaky handbasket. And so he sets his coffee down across from her on the counter and gets in her personal space. I'd be asking that question from about 15 feet away.
Hey, honey. How are you?
Fine.
This is getting to be a little bit like Groundhog Day, isn't it? Let's see if we can actually get through it.
Hey, honey. How are you?
Fine, I guess.
What's going on?
Well, Obama is trying to force gay marriage on this country.
What? Well, no wonder she's upset. There she is, happily hetero married to this seemingly innocuous guy who brings his coffee over and looks surprised that she's there, and Obama's trying to force gay marriage on this country. She doesn't want to go back to dating. I mean, they're not going to be able to be hetero married anymore because Obama's trying to force gay marriage on this country. Now she's going to have to go out and get all gay married to some woman, and he's going to have to go get gay married to some man. And they spent so much on the wedding. Well, too bad. Because Obama's trying to force gay marriage on this country.
Well, Obama is trying to force gay marriage on this country. That's not the change I voted for.
I didn't vote for no change. I voted for John McCain to keep things just the way they were. Him and that woman who shot moose from helicopters, because that's the American way. That's what I done voted for. They didn't want no gay marriage. I wanted moose shot from helicopters. And I wanted to let Detroit go plumb bust and see the economy just wallowing in its own final death throes on the ground. And I wanted the Dow Jones to go down below 6,000 like it was headed under George Bush where God wanted it.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. Those gay people, though, they don't have any values. I mean, never mind the fact that there are literally about a million same-sex families in this country who are raising children and trying to do the best job that they can of it, who get up and get the young'uns off to school every day, who make sure that they're up to date on their shots and take them to the doctor when they're sick if they have health insurance. Sometimes they take them to the doctor when they're sick when they don't have health insurance and just hope they can figure out some way to pay. But they don't have any values. God, this is vomit-inducing. We'll vote for someone with values. And then the closing shot shows that man who was surprised to find that woman still in the house, and I guess there's a little kid with a whole mess of hair all over his head. And there's another kid, and there's a daughter there, and they're all just sitting in the living room enjoying all their values and hoping their family doesn't get split up when Obama tries to impose the gay marriage on America. Campaign for American Values. Right. Because, you know, American values are bigotry and prejudice and hatred against the other and the unknown. You know, those American values. By the way, the stream petered out there for a second, but it's back up and running. Dr. John noting, force gay marriage? If I were the husband, I'd be thinking to myself, you know, Todd down at the plant would never be this passive-aggressive and insane. I wonder if he's single. Okay, I guess. Todd down at the plant. Yeah, you know, the non-union plant down below down back behind the cornbread curtain where nobody has any representation or anything. Ron and Raleigh noting, are you sure? Are you sure this woman isn't carrying on with some hussy on the down low? P.S. Caught in late. What did I miss? The story of the program so far. Hopefully the stream is back up and running now for you guys. But, you know, I told you. This is going to get filthy by the time we get to Election Day. The right wing has and will continue to do everything in its power to try to disgust people to the point that they simply will not vote. because by not voting, one gives a tacit advantage to the right wing. Another part of the right wing plot to disgust people is the old voting for the lesser of two evils meme. That goes all the way back in it to, in its origins to George Wallace in 1968 when he said, "I'm going to take a message to Washington. There's not a dime's worth of difference between a Republican and a Democrat." Lesser of two evils. That was started by a Republican message machine. And man, that one took hold on our side like nobody's business. Thanks, Dr. John. We are back. And, you know, they started Monday morning with, "Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago?" Because that's what St. Reagan said, and you have to say what St. Reagan said. And, well, yeah, come to think of it, that's a question that's pretty easily answered. The fine folks over at Think Progress went and dug up some headlines from 4 years ago. You know, 12 minus 4 is 8, therefore 2012 minus 4 is 2008. 4 years ago, these were some of the headlines that were out there. God, was it only 4 years ago that we were still under the lash of George W. Bush? Yes, it was. No wonder it's so easy to forget, though, because they wouldn't allow George anywhere near their little clavern. Oh, let's see. New York Daily News, September 16th, 2008. Stock shock felt round the world gets nasty as Lehman tanks. Merrill vanishes, AIG wobbles. The Albuquerque Journal, I knew I should have taken that left turn at Albuquerque. The Albuquerque Journal, September 21st, 2008. Depression coming? Boil some beans. Ladies who quilt give tips on surviving tough times. Then there's the St. Louis Post-Dispatch of September 21st, 2008. One day on the brink, on Wednesday, it seemed the U.S. economy might collapse. Pittsburgh Tribune Review of September 27th, 2008. Remember, that's the Richard Mellon Scaife organ. Oh, by the way, well, we'll save that for tomorrow. Great Depression, closer than U.S. admits, report finds. Politico asked on September 19th, 2008, will Bush become the new Hoover? Colorado Springs Gazette of September 27th, 2008, stated, developers bend under housing meltdown. Headline from the Florida News Press, September 27th, 2008, Depression seen possible. CNN, September 17th, 2008. Wall Street meltdown continues. NPR, September 19th, 2008. Communist liberals! Is it really the next Great Depression? And then finally, the New York Times of September 20th, 2008. Behind closed doors, warnings of calamity. And while it might come as a complete and total surprise to Bishop Willard Romney and Paul zombie-eyed Granny Starver Ryan, Barack Obama wasn't president then. The guy whose policies they want to bring back was. Well, I'm no economist, but I'm just saying. But yeah, they started out Monday with, "Are you better off than you were 4 years ago?" Well, yeah, actually we are. Great googly moogly. Thanks for letting me know, everybody, that yes, the stream is back. The effort to keep people from voting for by any one of a variety of means is taking a number of forms. There's no difference between the Democrats and Republicans, or lesser of two evils, or just plain old-fashioned sheer disgust, or legislative efforts, like the one in Ohio. Yeah, this is a real dandy. Secretary of State of Ohio is refusing to comply with a court order. How many divisions does the court control, I guess, is his query. John Husted, Republican Secretary of State of Ohio, has refused to change the restrictions he placed on the early voting schedule, despite the actions of a federal court to restore in-person early voting during the three-day period before the general election. His claim now is that I can't do that because we're going to take this up to the U.S. Court of Appeals and voters will be confused. I love that confusion argument. I've heard that in other contexts, and it's equally sickening. Well, people, we can't follow, we can't obey the court because it's confusing to obey the court. The story I'm reading noted that Secretary of State Husted first restricted the voting hours in Democratic-leaning urban counties to weekdays only. And then because there was an outcry, he said, well, all right, nobody gets to vote early. One man is holding the entire franchise hostage in the state of Ohio, and it is not a mistake. It is not an accident that he is a Republican. Not an accident at all. Sparky in the chat room. Pointed something else out to me. Out in California, Proposition 32 is on the ballot there. Proposition 32 would silence workers by banning contributions. Proposition 32 in California exempts super PACs from a ban on contributions, but it includes unions in that ban. How about that? And that's another piece of phony baloney. Well, you know, as long as we include corporations, we can include unions too. What is it? 100 to 1? 1,000 to 1? 100,000 to 1 dollars between corporations and unions? The gulf is so broad as to make the union side of it almost minuscule, and the right wing can't even stand that. They don't want the working people, they don't want the proles out there saying who it is that they want folks, other proles, to vote for. That's intolerable. Got it? Yeah. You better get it. There's a jillion different ways of turning off a voter, And I'd say that the Republican Party probably knows every last one of them and is working every last one of them. Just be alert. Know when you're being had. Understand that when you pay to go into the circus, all the games are rigged. From video game voting machines to optical scanners that can't count the same count one ballot the same way twice. The game's rigged. But I don't tell you that to keep you away. I tell you that so that you can be advocates in your own communities. So that you can insist upon the integrity of your ballot. Because if these thugs get their way, well, they've already told you what they want to do. They want it all. On the little TV here in the studio, I have MSNBC running in the background because I can't stand the clean coal ads. But lo and behold, you get on MSNBC, what do you get? You get ads from Pat Boone about reverse mortgages, and you get ads for fracking. That is what for-profit media delivers. So thanks very kindly for the contribution that came in. Brandon sent a note. He said, "Hey, Bob, I enjoyed your Labor Day broadcast last night. Sorry you had to work yesterday, but listening to you was like having you over to our house as we enjoyed barbecue and engaging in good conversation." Thank you, Brandon. Thank you very kindly. And Brandon has us rolling for the evening. Brandon has kicked in to get us started. Hopefully others will step forward as well. Dr. John caught a word in that story about Ohio that sort of jumped out at me, too. Voting restrictions in urban districts. We know the code. That means black districts, right? Right. "Interesting," says Dr. John. "I don't recall when Ohio seceded. The Old South does not have a lock on racism." No. The GOP, however, will exploit it to the nth degree, however. Did I say however twice there? Just checking. Strap in. The filth is rolling. As I noted the other night, Hunter S. Thompson said the hogs are in the tunnel and they will travel on a road of bones. He wasn't kidding either. Here's another one of those lies that comes roaring out of the cesspool mouth of the right wing. It's the Democrats that are after Medicare, you see. Paul Ryan, the zombie-eyed granny starver, he's going to protect Medicare, and he'll do it for Willard. And Bishop Willard Romney, he just loves him some Medicare. This is a robocall that's been going out all over the country today.
"The message from Romney for president.
Some think Obamacare is the same as free health care, but nothing is free. Obama is raiding $716 billion from Medicare, changing the program forever. Taxing wheelchairs and pacemakers, raising taxes on families making less than $120,000. Free health care comes at a very high price. The Romney-Ryan plan will restore Medicare funding and protect and strengthen the program for the next generation."
This call was paid for by Romney for President, Inc. at 857-293-0899.
Wow, isn't that disgusting? But if you pay attention to this stuff, if you understand, and it's old movie buffs, we've all seen Sergeant York, right? Gary Cooper as Sergeant Alvin York captures a whole bunch of Germans in the First World War, and he asks the officer, if you was a wanting to get back to the American lines, which way would you go through these here trenches? And the German officer said, I would go that way. And savvy hillbilly Alvin York says, then we'll be a-going the other way, because I'm a-figuring you're a lying German. And, of course, he marches him back, and he gets it, and he did right. Because the guy was lying to him. He was trying to march him into a trap. This is that, you see. Understand that this is a psycho. The right wing is engaged in a psychological assault on the people of the United States. Whatever they accuse Barack Obama of wanting to do to you, like with Medicare, you, like Sergeant York, may assume that the exact opposite is the truth, and you may go the other way. We know there's no free health care. That would be civilized. A health care program that was based upon taxes uniformly paid by us all in equal measure. But the right wing will simply make statements that are diametrically opposed to what they intend to do. And it's up to you to figure out that they're actually telegraphing to you what they will do. The question is, our old buddy Bart Cop asked, is, do the Democrats have enough spine to fight back? And I have to say, I am not encouraged by this. Yesterday, the chairman of the California delegation to the convention compared zombie-eyed Granny Starver Paul Ryan to Joseph Goebbels. He gave an interview to the San Francisco Chronicle, John Burton did, and he said the following. They lie. He's talking about Pig Lickens. He said the following. They lie, and they don't care if people think they lie. Joseph Goebbels, it's the big lie. You keep repeating it. How can a senior citizen believe Ryan when he says, I'm going to save your Medicare, or that my budget balances? If you're not telling the truth, you're lying. Joseph Goebbels' concept was the big lie. If you tell it enough, people will think it's the truth. The headline to this story is, California Dem says Ryan lies like Nazis Goebbels. Now, I've just read you his quotes, John Burton's. At no point does he say Paul Ryan is a Nazi. At no point does he say that. At no point does he say that Paul Ryan hates Jews or gypsies or gay people. Although you could probably make a credible argument for all three. He does at least, he liked at least one person of color, however. Maybe more on that later. John Burton didn't call him a Nazi. He simply made reference to a notorious purveyor of a known theory. If you doubt me, you can ask Jim at some point. Jim is steeped in this history. Jim knows what Joseph Goebbels did. Joseph Goebbels said that if you tell the people a lie enough, that it will become the truth. Hell, we've already seen it happen. How many people have you heard say, well, you know, Social Security may not be there in a few years? The only way Social Security will not be there in a few years is if we, the people, allow Congress to kill it. A Congress made up of majority Republicans who have hated it from the day of its inception. Remember, please, that Social Security was passed by the Congress in the 1930s without a single Republican vote. And they have hated it from that day into this. Great-grandfathers told grandfathers. Grandfathers told fathers. Fathers told sons. Down through the generations, we hate this, and someday we will get rid of it. And then when they got old, they went and signed up for it, and they were glad to have it. But nobody ever called them hypocrites. No, I say this story is not does not inspire confidence because of what happened after. John Burton spoke the truth. The Republican Party does operate on the theory of the big lie. Hell, we saw that during during the run up to the slaughter of the people of Iraq. They've got weapons of mass destruction. No, they don't. Yes, they do. No, they don't. Yes, they do. Well, Saddam Hussein, he's the one that did 9/11. No, he didn't. Yes, he did. So, among others, the Republican Jewish Coalition said, John Burton ought to know better than to bring the Nazis and their victims into our current political debates. He didn't say a damned word about the Holocaust. He didn't say that zombie-eyed granny starver Paul Ryan is hotting up the ovens. He didn't say that. He said that the Republican lies that were spewed all over America last week at their filthy little convention were similar to the theory of the big lie as propagated by Joseph Goebbels. And you know what? It's true. The Obama campaign also ran away from John Burton as quickly as it could. Obama for America National Press Secretary Ben LaBolt said, that obviously doesn't reflect the views of the campaign. That doesn't have any place in the political discourse here in Charlotte. Bull! It has a huge place in Charlotte. Because if we cannot call liars liars, we are screwed. And then this. From the Los Angeles Times. John Burton apologizes for comparing Republicans to Nazi Goebbels. John Burton, the chairman of the California Democratic Party, has apologized for comparing Republicans to Nazi propaganda chief Joseph Goebbels, a comment that quickly sparked outcry from the GOP. Well, of course it sparked outcry from them. Wolves don't like to be called wolves. They like to be called house pets. That way you let them into your house. Burton made a point of noting that he never used the word Nazi. However, he did invoke the Nazi Minister of Propaganda twice. Nazis don't like being called Nazis. Even in Germany, they don't. I've got their little stickers. They've got a new name now. I've got photographs of their stickers. They're the NPD or the NDP or something. National Democratic Party. Republican National Committee said Mr. Burton's remarks were outrageous and insulting to all Americans. Well, listen, shitbirds. I'm an American, and I was not insulted in the least by it. I was encouraged by it because it means that somebody understands what you filth merchants are up to. They don't have to goose step to be what they are. So it's not inspiring to see people run away from the facts.
Well, couldn't we just say that without mentioning Joseph Goebbels?
No! Because you know what? If John Burton had said, listen, this is just the theory of the big lie, and the big lie says if you tell a lie enough, often enough, it will eventually be treated as the truth.
The Republican Party still would have said, well, how dare he mention a Nazi policy?
And the LA Times would have said, John Burton apologizes for calling Republicans Nazis. Marty noting, and how often have the Repiglicans referred to union supporters and the Occupy movement as the brown shirts? If that's not a Nazi reference, what is? Well, it's okay if they do it. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. Titanic Tuesday. It is that. And we'll take our little top-of-the-hour break. If you want to participate in the program, you know the number, right? 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on. If you care to save us the toll-free freight, you can dial us at 304-658-3333. And I do have the Skype fired up. Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact handle there on Skype if you want to jump in. Had a great call via Skype from Europe last night from our buddy Truth Seeker. We're about $100 away from being where we need to be fundraising on any given night here. It's just 10 people at $10 a piece. That's all. Thank you for keeping all of this going. We've got a little long-distance dedication coming in this evening. From Sandra. She sent a song along. A little bumper music, she said. For the love fest that black folks are giving Obama this week in North Carolina, sycophantic, uncritical followers that got nothing much in his first term and will probably get less in his next term. Disturbing news coming out of Charlotte. There's a lot of folks down there who hang on to the very, very last thin threads of their existence. They live in motels. Usually those motels go for about $40 a night. Some of those motel rooms have skyrocketed to $250 a night this week. And people are out on the streets who are struggling to survive. I'm sorry. I mean, I'm not gonna sit on that kind of information. I'm not just a cheerleader here. Jesus, there's no percentage in it. If I just sit here and wax rhapsodic about the beauties of the Democratic Party. In addition to being broke and struggling to keep this thing on the air, I also lose my integrity. And this is the kind of thing that happens whether it's the Super Bowl coming to town or a political convention coming to town, the Olympics coming to town, the poor suffer. And it's happening in Charlotte while folks have booze and blues parties and so forth. Yeah. Said last night I'd kind of like to be down there. Stories like that kind of make me glad I ain't. So a long-distance dedication going out from Sandra and the Green News Report on its way. This is America's liberal voice, America's progressive voice, America's conversation across the back fence. Head on RadioNetwork.com. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid. Green News Report is on its way. Your phone calls, too. Light them up.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, September 4, 2012.
President Obama promised to begin to slow the rise of the oceans.
Romney mocks climate change.
Denying climate change won't make it stop.
While Obama doesn't, as the Democratic National Convention gets underway.
It's critical in the long term to have the smallest emissions footprint possible when you generate electricity.
Energy company CEO pushes a price on carbon. The Midwest drought now coming for your popcorn. Plus, speaking of popping...
As this heat continues, they're going to continue to just blow up and pop.
Hurricane Isaac's recovery, now with dead rats.
Ew! All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
What's the solution to global warming? We don't need one, because it isn't real. And even if it is, big whoop, just buy an air conditioner, you...
You tell him, Bill Maher. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, as the Democratic National Convention gets underway in Charlotte this week, Joe Rome over at Climate Progress notes a change in the strategy of Team Obama and the way they're dealing with Republican climate change denial. Describing the Obama White House's take on climate change over the past several years as the Voldemort of national issues, the threat that must not be named, things seem to be changing out on the stump as Obama is finally, once again, talking about climate change.
Yeah, and it looks like it may signal a shift in campaign strategy. But we'll have more on that in a moment. First, on Monday, President Obama toured southern Louisiana communities hit hard by heavy flooding and wind damage from Hurricane Isaac.
I want to particularly thank FEMA and the state and local authorities, because sometimes in the past we haven't seen the kind of coordination that is necessary in response to these kinds of disasters. This time we've seen it.
Sometimes in the past, eh?
Yeah, very diplomatically referring to the 1,800 people who died after Hurricane Katrina. Thankfully, in Hurricane Isaac, only 7 fatalities reported in 2 states. Serious flooding lingers in areas outside New Orleans' federal levee system. Over 100,000 customers remain without power a week after the storm, as forecasters warn another major heat wave is moving in. Isaac also stirred up a new surge of BP oil tar balls on Gulf Coast beaches.
Lovely.
Yes, but also washing up on shore, an expensive public health problem, says Waveland, Mississippi Mayor David Garcia. 10,000 dead nutria, a kind of swamp rat.
It's a terrible smell. As this heat continues, they're going to continue to just blow up and pop.
Oh, man.
Nasty, I know. Hurricane Isaac brought a little rain to the drought-stricken Midwest, but that was too late to save America's popcorn. Agriculture analysts say you can expect to pay even more for popcorn at the movies than you already do, because the delicate U.S. popcorn crop, the primary supplier to the rest of the world, was especially hard hit by the drought.
So the $15 I usually pay for 3 cents of popcorn is going to go up to $20 for 6 cents of popcorn?
Oh, you betcha it is. Get out your popcorn for the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina this week.
I can't afford it.
Starting Tuesday, the Democratic Party hopes to draw a sharp contrast with the Republican Party, including on renewable energy policy and climate change. Last week at the Republican National Convention, GOP presidential candidate Mitt Romney pushed the Republicans' energy policy. Oil above all, drill everywhere, gut investment in clean energy, and treat climate change as a joke.
You make it sound like it's not a good thing.
President Obama promised to begin to slow the rise of the oceans. And to heal the planet. My promise is to help you and your family.
As if somehow your family will do well if we destabilize the climate on the only habitable planet in the universe.
Well, there's that.
The Obama campaign responded to Romney saying, quote, it is nothing short of terrifying to imagine a party that openly mocks climate change taking back the White House. In contrast, President Obama has suddenly begun mentioning climate change in campaign speeches.
Denying climate change won't make it stop. These things won't make for a brighter future.
Unlike the Republican Party platform that doesn't even mention climate change, the Democratic Party platform explicitly calls for increased investment in clean energy and for an international treaty to limit greenhouse gas emissions. But unlike their 2008 platform, the Democrats stop short of calling for a price on carbon emissions. But Jim Rogers, the CEO of the nation's largest electric utility, Duke Energy, tells CNN that carbon pricing would be a smart solution.
I think it's critical in the long term to have the smallest emissions footprint possible when you generate electricity. And so to me, addressing the issue sooner so we can phase our way into it is going to minimize the cost impact on consumers.
Wow, that's an amazing statement from the CEO of the nation's largest electrical supplier.
There's surprising support for that among the nation's electric utilities.
Add that to the statement by CEO of ExxonMobil, Rex Tillerson, with his concern about global climate change. It's almost as if when these CEOs have the camera rollings, they say one thing, and then behind closed doors, they're spending millions and millions to get Republicans to say something else.
Indeed.
For more on that story and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report. We rely on you until Duke Energy starts taking out ads. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Eighteen minutes past the hour, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Email coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Kind of a, correspondence without portfolio during this convention week. Under the subject line, what the hell is the matter with white folks? Ron asks, or says, reading an article in my local paper entitled Convention Doesn't Resonate with Mecklenburg's Neighbors. Mecklenburg is the county where Charlotte resides, the location, for some unknown reason, of the Democratic National Convention. In the article, John Kamen, a local cabinetmaker, says, it's all a bunch of talk. Nothing happens. Oh, see, the Republicans won another one. It's all a bunch of talk. Nothing happens. He's going to vote for Romney. Joe and Kay Jarab, a couple in their 80s that are registered Democrats, plan to vote for Romney. Well, they looked extremely well preserved in that ad by Americans for Values or whatever that we talked about at the beginning of the program. That must have been them. Honey, what's wrong? Oh, nothing. I guess. Brad Harris, a registered Republican, says, I don't think how it's doing right now is working. I want somebody different in there to give them a shot. Ron noting, give them a shot? What does this idiot think 8 years of George Bush was? Maybe it's time to give these idiots what they want. Signed, Ron, P.S. Too much nuance in that big lie comparison. Yeah, I guess. You know what? I can tell this is the Democratic National Convention that I've got running on mute in the background here, because they just panned around the audience and there's all kinds of different skin tones in the building. Whereas when they panned around the room in Tampa for the Republican National Committee convention, it looked like somebody dumped open a sack of Martha White flour. Yeah. Isaac digging Sanders bumper music, by the way, asking via Twitter earlier. He said, is that the horn jamming like that? Yes, Isaac, Yes. But we couldn't do it without y'all's help. So, you know, the phone lines are open, 877-443-2366 and 304-658-3333. They both come into the same place. They go into the same queue. It's a separate queue for Skype, but that's only because it doesn't come into the phones. But you can get in any of those three ways. On Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn is the handle. And let's see if what we got here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Jim, how are you? I guess I conjured you a little bit.
Sir?
I guess I conjured you a little bit.
Well, if that lady in Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil can do it, I guess you can, too.
Well, hear, hear.
So, how the hell are you?
You know, I'm just happy to be here. Had a lot of good responses on last night's show, and folks happy to be able to hear it, and so you know that got things off to a nice start, and hopefully it'll will continue along the same lines this evening.
Well, I hope so too. You definitely had it going on, that's for sure. You know, pursuant to the Big Lie by Joseph Goebbels.
Mm-hmm. I mean, are we not allowed to even reference that anymore? I mean, it was identified.
Read Joseph Goebbels' diaries. They've been in publication for years. And by reading those diaries that I have read several times, you will understand the mind of the man who was the propagator of the big lie.
Hey.
You know, it's amazing what people will confide to their diaries.
And like you said, they're publicly available, which means that they were available to be read by the likes of Karl Rove.
They've been in publication since I can remember.
But I mean, wasn't Iraq Has Weapons of Mass Destruction, was not that a perfect manifestation of the big lie?
Of course it was. Saddam didn't have any weapons of mass destruction. And finally it got to the point where Bush was seen on TV crawling underneath the presidential desk, telling people he was looking for WMDs.
Yeah, because that was also funny while all them American boys and girls were dying over there, right?
I thought it was about as funny as liposarcoma.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, what kind of, here I go again, what kind of person would have that type of mentality to produce some type of grotesque joke about that? I just wish I could have been there in the Oval Office that night wearing one of those helmets that made you invisible so I could have kicked him in his fat ass. I really would. I mean, I had never heard anything make me so angry as when I saw that.
It's still infuriating these years later, isn't it?
You mentioned
that particular incident. Last night I was watching some television after the program. I haven't done that in forever. And I was over, I think I was on the Travel Channel, and I saw a public service announcement for brain injuries and PTSD regarding veterans returned home from Iraq and Afghanistan. It was the first time I'd ever seen that PSA, Jim. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it, and I have a second cousin who is suffering horribly from TBI. I mean, he has these migraine headaches that put him in bed for days that make him totally, you know, incapacitated. And he served in both Iraq and Afghanistan. And I talk to his mother weekly, and she tells me that these things are crippling.
And you remember how George Bush zeroed out the budget for traumatic brain injury at the CDC?
I do. And she is still a Republican and still plans to vote for Romney, I'm sure. We don't discuss it much. I just discuss her health, her son's health and, you know, efforts to reassure her that the VA will try to take care of him and the relations that I had with the VA and taking care of soldiers when they came back from the first Persian Gulf War. And I don't tell her this, but it was very difficult. There's so much inertia in the VA and other agencies to really take care of these young men and young women whose lives have been permanently altered, not only physically, but also mentally, and also, well, not mentally, but also organically, because these IEDs and or bombs and things like that, when they go off and you're subjected to the shock of these explosions, I mean, they can literally do, they can turn your brain into scrambled eggs. As a matter of fact, when you are near an explosion, for example, the shock from it can generate such a wave that it will kill you. And when the corpsman gets to the soldier, he can't find any type of injury on the body. The system simply shuts down because the human body is not equipped to deal with shock waves of that magnitude.
And now we have PSA. I mean, I was glad to see the PSAs, but of course, being a PSA, they can't say brought to you by a filthy liar named George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and Condi Rice and Colin Powell and Donald Rumsfeld and Paul Wolfowitz. And no, they can't say that. But, you know, part and parcel, the reason I mention that is because that's just another thing that America has forgotten.
Of how quickly we forget those people whom we send into harm's way. And, of course, we equate it with flags and bands and things of that nature. But we don't.
I mean, we have apparently forgotten that at the end of George W. Bush's tenure in office, Jim, where was the Dow? Around 6,000?
It was pretty low.
And it's all it's up. What? It's been playing with 14,000?
Yeah, it's well over 13, approaching 14. I was watching IMUS today, and of course on FBN, Fox News Business News News Net, they have that constantly running, and I was amazed to see it so high. But it's great for Wall Street, I guess. But for people who, for example, in Charlotte tonight, had to turn out of motel rooms because of the Democratic convention, I don't think it's so great for them.
No, it isn't. And, you know, there are still way too many unemployed in this country. But when, for instance, when Clint Eastwood was talking to the chair, you know, he said there were about, the number he used was about twice as many unemployed people as there are in the country.
He said there were over 23,500, when it's half that much.
Right.
Yeah, I was talking to you about that last week, I believe. And, you know, another thing, you know, and of course I am one of the first to be catty and bitchy about things, and I will certainly own up to that. But they were talking about the on IMUS this morning. I think it was Bernard McGirt was giving his report, and that Kerr O'Reilly had reference to a young woman who is a student at Georgetown University in law, and is going to deal with Planned Parenthood.
Sandra Flock?
Yeah, and I believe that's her name. And what they suggested tacitly was that instead of a balloon drop, that they all have a huge ceiling filled with blown-up condoms that should drop after her speech. I thought to myself, that's just real top drawer.
Well, you know what, that Jim, that is an extension of the kind of man, that's some long-ago filth, because I remember when Ann Coulter was having a hissy during the Clinton administration, alleging that the Clintons decorated their Christmas tree with hanging condoms.
I remember that, and that was the biggest lie that ever hatched. Because I belonged to the White House Historical Association, and when that happened, I called them. And I called a man who I know who works for the Historical Association for the White House that provides the White House Christmas tree ornaments and other things related to the White House. And he said, that's just an absolute falsehood. He said, there is nothing further from the truth. Because this guy deals with the volunteers who came into the White House. They have a select number of volunteers who come in and decorate the White House Christmas trees. there are a number in their respective rooms. And there were no condoms on the Clinton's White House Christmas tree.
But lo and behold, here it is again, making its debut in the second decade of the 21st century, just sort of rehashed and remarketed and rebranded for a new generation.
Well, I mean, I heard today apologies and for the proponents of supply side economics and how that was still a valuable and valid economic system. Trickle down. And they still believe in that stuff. Why do they believe in it? Because it's convenient for them to believe in it.
Well, because it cui bono, it inures to their benefit, Jim.
Well, even back during the days of Bush 41, and God, I long for those days. I mean, Bush 41 would be an angel compared to what they're trying to put in there now.
Well, that's true.
I mean, I can remember.
Remember, if it was Nixon versus Romney, Nixon would be a liberal.
Well, I can remember when I had.
That's
to
how far right the political spectrum has been shoved.
I can remember when I had to go to an Office of Personnel Management meeting back in, oh, God, it was during Bush 41's administration. And one of the things he did during a televised thing to our meeting, it was a thank you for the public service of federal civil servants. Because he had been one himself as a director of the CIA and stuff like that. He'd been in government service as an ambassador to China and things of that nature. And he had not lost track of the good that is provided by the civil service and public service and men and women who had gone into public service who could be making a hell of a lot more money elsewhere. I guess the remnants of those people who were called into public service when John F. Kennedy gave his call back in 1960 with his inaugural address, of which I'm one. And I appreciate the president's comments on the public service contribution. You don't hear it now. And these people have just called.
No, because government is the enemy now, right?
Yeah, they do. I mean,
why? And let's explore that for just a minute, Jim. Why would anybody go into public service in the government now, considering that the Republicans think that government workers are the problem with America? Why would you even want a job in government?
You wouldn't bother.
I mean, don't those Republican staffers understand whose paychecks are coming in? They are not paid poorly.
No, they're not.
That it's taxpayer dollars that are keeping them in booze and shrimp?
Well, these Republican servants who are the ones who are they're not career civil servants. They're appointed, and of course they have patronage jobs. They have an entirely different pay scale than the general schedule, the GS system, of which I, you know, was a part. And they don't have to go through the vetting that the career people do. I mean, they're in service as long as their boss is in service, and when their boss is gone, they're gone. Of course, by that time, they found another more lucrative job over on K Street as a lobbyist, or because K Street can utilize what knowledge they've gleaned as a Schedule C public service. The ones who have patronage jobs and who really have the inside track. Because basically the career civil service has to do what the patronage job people and the elected representatives who hire them tell them to do. That's the way it works. And, you know, if they get out of line, the career people do, they are termed as whistleblowers. And they are threatened with termination or transfer to ADAC, Alaska, or someplace like that. It can be really nasty if you should step out of line with your better, so to speak.
Well, indeed. Things could get real bad real quick, can't they?
Yeah. Excuse me. And the twinkling of an eye within a heartbeat. I mean, you really have to toe the line, and you can't say a whole lot. Because if you do, somebody is going to make a phone call that's going to place your career in serious jeopardy. And a career in the government is not an easy task, Bob. It is very difficult to even get into, with the vetting processes and the security clearances and all that stuff. But these other people who are in higher grades, who are up in the Capitol building, I don't think they have to, I know they don't have to go through the vetting process, and the, I know Obama definitely tried to improve that vetting process when he became president. And I forget the name of the forms they had to fill out. It's an OF something or SF. It's all changed if I was in there. But, I know that I had to undergo a security clearance, and by the time they adjudicated that security clearance, it was time to redo another one.
It would take
from a year to a year and a half to complete it. But these people don't have to undergo that, because if they went into their backgrounds and did FBI checks and what they call NACI checks or national investigation checks on these people, they would find all kinds of dirt. And yet these people are the ones who are at the top of the food chain. It's just incredible to me. I mean, I really think that anybody who's in the government today, whether they're elected or whatever, they should have to go through a very serious background check. And they should be able to find out exactly what's been going on in their, you know, in their lives, whether they have DUIs or whether they have, you know, infractions of the law and stuff like that. But yet they seem to get around it. And it's just, you know, excuse me, if I maybe I'm naive and I appear to be very incredulous, but it's just not fair. But it's just unfortunate what's happening. And I hope the Democratic Convention can do something to turn things around, because, you know, there are so many lies that were told last week, and I was comparing the Republican version of truth. Have you ever seen one of these Russian nesting dolls?
Oh, yes, oh, yes.
Well, you know, on the first doll, you pull out one face, and then the second doll, you're supposed to pull out the same face, basically. But with them, their nesting doll theory is when you open up one, you're going to see something else hidden on the inside. And when you get to the core of that nesting doll, you're going to see something that you don't want to see.
You're just in a straight-up nightmare.
Yeah, that you didn't see on the outside.
And they didn't want you to see.
No. They're going to, you know, just as you can, you know, open a nesting doll, they're going to open it surely but slowly, and you'll really see what is, in my view, I know what they're going to do. I know what they're going to try to do. I mean, it's just totally transparent. But apparently it must be translucent to a lot of people who say they're going to vote for Romney. And, you know, this thing about the Democratic Party pulling the Jerusalem plank out of the platform.
Yeah, I saw that earlier that you mentioned it. Explain that, please.
Well, the Republicans, Romney, says that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Romney, you have your geography wrong. It's Tel Aviv, or Tel Aviv, or however you want to pronounce it. It isn't Jerusalem. And that is extremely provocative.
And is designed to, well, that's a dog whistle, Jim.
Well, it is designed to inflame Arabs and people in that part of the world.
But it's also designed to call, it is a call to the faithful, to the right-wing evangelicals who believe that if Israel can just have Jerusalem as the capital, then eventually they can rebuild the temple, and when they rebuild the temple, the Antichrist will come, and when the Antichrist will come, we'll have the tribulations. I mean, it's all a bunch of made-up baloney, but... Then after the tribulations, Jesus comes back, and all the Christians get to put all the Jews to the sword if they don't confess Christ. And that's what they're waiting for, Jim. And, I mean, they're drooling while they do it. These are the same people that run naked into the Sea of Galilee, by the way, and, you know, pee-pee in the water and that sort of thing.
Were they actually run naked into the Sea of Galilee?
One of them did. Others just stripped down to their BVDs.
Or their magic underwear.
Well, I don't know if there's any magic underwear folks there, but, yeah.
You know, I want to ask you...
That probably would have made the underwear more magic.
How is magic underwear designed?
Designed or defined?
Designed. I mean, is it like a Bermuda short type thing on the lower part and a t-shirt on the upper?
As I understand it, it's kind of like a
union suit,
a short pants union suit of sort of, I guess, thin cotton.
And may I ask what the purpose of it is?
It is supposed to, in the dogma of the Mormon Church, it's supposed to protect you against all harm and all evil. At one point in time, some Mormon higher-ups even argued that it would stop bullets.
Well, gosh, I wonder why Calvin Klein didn't start deciding this.
they're not very stylish.
Why isn't it designed or issued to our forces in theaters of operation where they will encounter such dangers if it will stop bullets?
Well, if they're upper level, inner sanctum, 32nd degree noble lumpkin Mormons, they're wearing it. Well, by the way, Marty also wants to know, he wrote in, he said, ask Jim if he remembers the Bush administration converting the political appointees to civil service appointees. He said, I think burrowing was what it was called.
Ramspec appointments. It was called a Ramspec appointment when you could take, for example, a political appointee, for example, the head of Office of Personnel Management, and I can't remember her name under Bush 41. When his tenure came to an end, her appointment was converted to a, and I'm not necessarily sure that this was civil service because she went to work for the Smithsonian.
But do you remember all those appointees? I forget who that little that young woman was who was appointed inside one of the departments. They were moles. They were moles who were burrowed into the civil service.
Oh, you mean you talk about Linda Tripp, people like that? She was a GM 14.
No. She went to, this one particular woman went to either Jerry Falwell or Pat Robertson School of Law, where they teach that the Ten Commandments is the, but she was made some, she was like a White House liaison to the Defense Department or something, and we were told toward the end of the Bush administration that there were countless people who had been burrowed into the government, who could never be found out, and would forever work to subvert the basically a right wing fifth column.
Well, I think the mechanism that they used in the civil service conversion was called a Ramspec appointment. Now, y'all can check me out on that. It's been a while. And my memory is not as good as it used to be, but it was called a Ramspec appointment. Because I used to have to deal with the civil service and OPM, Office of Personnel Management, and on different issues, because that was part of my job. But I think Ramspec, and y'all, I'm sure how it's spelled. It's spelled like it sounds. Ramspec. Maybe Ramspect or something like that. But there was some type of mechanism, I do remember, in which they could take a person from a Schedule C or a political appointee and make them into the high-grade civil service. Of course, you know, when you're working in Washington as a high-grade Schedule C or a political appointee, you find out so many things that are able to circumvent Title V, which is the law that governs the structure and the requirements for the civil service. They have a way to do that, yeah. The mechanism, I'm sure, is still there.
You have called to mind in Ron's memory, Ron and Ron, Jim, the story of Bunnytown Great House. or I mean Greenhouse. Ron notes, she was the career civil servant that called BS on the Halliburton no-bid contracts during Dim Leader's administration. Great reviews for over 20 years, but then suddenly she became a horrible employee and was shortly shown the door.
Yeah, that happens. When you blow the whistle and you try to get into some of these deals are being made between contractors, particularly DOD or anywhere else, and that particular contractor has a lot of political influence, you can get into a world, not a world, not a solar system, but a universe of purity shit. Now, I don't know how to explain it, but that, yeah, you can. And you can find yourself on the street in a heartbeat, in spite of all the protections that are guaranteed a career civil servant under Title V. It's really pretty frightening. I mean, the closer you get to the power centers in Washington, it's like Icarus getting closer to the sun, the more quickly your wings can melt. And you have no capacity to remain airborne in your career. Does that answer his question?
I think it does. I think it does indeed.
And that's about all I have to say. I don't want to take up any more of your time because I know you have people waiting to talk to you, but I was just kind of appalled that someone would like, well, no, I wasn't, since it was Bill O'Reilly who was suggested they have a huge balloon drop of inflated condoms. Of course, he didn't say that, but it was definitely implied. And the girl in question who's to speak tonight from Georgetown Law School, who's going to be at the convention, confronted it directly.
And well, she's the one that, that's the woman that Flush Flimball called a slut.
Yeah, and then
that's her.
They had a reply to, who's the other guy from MSNBC who called that other Republican one who, not Ann Coulter, but there's another one with blonde hair.
Mm.
You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, Laura Ingraham.
Yeah, Laura Ingraham, who has some nasty things. You know, this guy called her a slut. And I think was suspended from service from NBC for a while. What is that guy's name, Bob? Come on.
Oh, I can't think of it right quick. But our buddy Mark did a little bit of research. He said sent me a link to something, Personnel Practices, an overview of RAMSPEC Act appointments, and says, yep, you're both right. So there you go. You have been confirmed once again, Jim. I appreciate it, and you have yourself a wonderful evening, all right?
Oh, same to you, and good luck to all your callers, and let's hope that things will work out tonight where we can get a little more unveiling of what these people did last week. And I just hope the Democrats can present some type of viable program that will register with the Americans.
But what becomes of a nation in which when a person lies, you can't call them a liar? At that point in time, the political process is in extreme jeopardy, is it not, Jim?
Well, if you do call these people a liar, then you're on your way not only out the door, but as you hit the street, you're going to have the Black Mariah out there waiting for you to take you to someplace you don't want to be, like the Lubyanka or the Lefortovo prisons that Stalin used in Moscow. And I'm not trying to exaggerate here, but it's just incredible what they can do to people's lives when a person is in government service and they're deprived of their livelihood and no one else will touch them after that person's national action is completed.
Right. They are forever tainted.
I mean, I would guess you'd better know how to make lattes or cut glass or something like that. Or you'd better have some cushion to fall back on because it won't be there.
Well, I find it interesting that one cannot even use, I mean, he didn't say, John Burton didn't say fascist, he didn't say Nazi, he didn't say Hitler, he didn't say any of that. He merely made reference to Joseph Goebbels and the big lie theory. So, I mean, how much more Orwellian can we get, Jim, that we can't even mention the big lie theory when the big lie theory is being employed?
Well, Bob, do you have to? I mean, do you have to call somebody a Nazi when they're using Nazi tactics?
Well, if it honks like a goose, and it hangs out with goose, and it steps like a goose,
I call them goose.
Well, yeah, like I've said before and said to me, it was a DOD expression. You know, we used to say, if it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck, by God, it is a duck. You can't call it by any other name. You certainly can't call it a dodo or a pterodactyl. It's a duck.
And there you go.
There it is. Well, listen, you take care, and you have a good night, and I wish you well, and good luck with your ACAC and all the other things that you're trying to do that will improve life as you know it.
And as we know it here. Yes, indeed. Thank you, Jim. Thank you very kindly. You have a good evening.
And the same to you, sir.
Bye now. Our good buddy Jim, calling from not too awfully far away. Lines are open. We'll go back to the phones in just a minute. 877-443-2366 or 304-658-3333. If you don't need us to carry the toll-free freight, that's fine. If you've got some sort of unlimited long-distance dialing plan, yeah, the direct dial number works just fine. I wanted to share just before we go back to the phones, I just wanted to share something with you. Now, remember, John Burton in California cannot reference the big lie theory even when it is being put into play. Even when fascists behave like fascists, we can't refer to them as fascists. On the other hand, however, we've got this from the former governor of the state of Mississippi, Stan, Haley Barbour.
I want to play a little bit of Chris Christie last night, and we'll get you started.
He was on Fox News on the 29th of August.
We need Romney and Paul Ryan, and we need them right now. But we got to tell each other the truth, right? Listen, there is doubt and fear for our future in every corner of our country.
This is a rehash of
I've traveled all the
Chris
country.
Christie
I've
cream.
Seen this myself. These feelings are real. This moment is real. And it's a moment like this where some skeptics wonder if American greatness is over. I believe in America and our history, and there's only one thing missing now, leadership. It takes leadership that you don't get from reading a poll. You see, Mr. President, real leaders don't follow polls. Real leaders change polls.
That was one of the big lines last night. Real leaders change polls, coming from Chris Christie. Some mixed reviews on how he did. How do you think he did?
I thought he was a big part of the message. Ann Romney was super, and I thought he was super, because instead of going out there and goring Barack Obama, he straight talk, he trusts the American people enough to tell the truth, and he made it plain. That's the kind of campaign that we're going to run. And it's going to be a campaign elevated to the problems that we face and up to the standards the American people deserve.
Do you get the idea this guy's operating in a different universe from you and me?
You've been instrumental over the years in so many political careers. When you look at Chris Christie and you think about the pressure that was put on him at one point in this race to be the man, to take on this nomination, he turned that down. What does that mean for him politically in the future, and does it feel like that dynamic, that star for him, has changed at all?
No, I think his star gets bigger and bigger. He's up for re-election next year.
Yeah.
His star gets bigger and bigger. That ain't his star, Haley.
And it's not an easy state, but he looks very strong. I believe he'll be reelected. And his future is what he wants it to be. He made the decision this time he wasn't ready. A lot of guys don't have the...
Yeah, so because it's Fox, they don't actually tell you the truth. They don't tell you that Chris Christie Cream decided he didn't want to run because he didn't think Romney could win.
Courage to tell the truth about that. They can't resist the temptation. But I think he's a real star in our party for a reason. He's taken a state with a Democratic legislature and getting things done. We pray for a president that'll do that. You know, Barack Obama...
Haley? We've got a Republican House, and for all that they've kept from being done, for all intents and purposes, Republican Senate. I don't think your analogy's working there, Haley.
Ronald whines and moans about the Republicans in the House. You know, when Ronald Reagan was president, he didn't whine and moan about the Democrats in the House. He got the job done. And in
excuse me? Yeah, they do live in an alternate universe, because I remember St. Reagan pissing and moaning about Democrats. I remember, well, there you go again.
Fairness. So did Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton took a Republican Congress. We got welfare reform. We got the big first balanced budget in a generation.
Yeah. Bill Clinton was hounded nearly into the ground over a matter of consensual oral sex by Mr. Barber's party, might add. But we got welfare reform, kept them people from getting that free money from the taxpayers. Kept some of them useless eaters off the rolls, don't you know?
All the things Reagan did, we need a president that'll do it. Just what Christie said the last little piece, she said, we need a president who'll lead.
Haley Barbour, former governor of Mississippi, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, sir. I hope we'll see you again.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure. Haley went on. And made a statement I mean, my God. He said, speaking of Chris Christie cream, he said, now remember, this is the former, this is a resident of and former governor of Mississippi, Stan, and all that goes with it. While I would love for Christie to put a hot poker to Obama's butt, I thought he did what he was supposed to do. That's what he said, you know, talking about Chris Christie cream speech at the RNC. You can't get away from it. These filthy sons and grandsons and great grandsons and great great grandsons cannot get away from what they would really love to do to the black man in the White House. I'd love for Christie to put a hot poker to Obama's butt. Because, see, back in the day, Haley Barbour's great-grandpappy probably did exactly that with his African slave down on the plantation. Branding was done of human beings. Whippings, lashings were regular occurrences. There's no law to stop them. You could whip or brand your slaves plumb to death. Well, he's being uppity and disobedient. I'd love to see Christie put a hot poker to Obama's butt. Jesus Christ. The filth never lets up. Yeah, Ed Schultz, that's who Jim and I were trying to think of. Thanks, Mark. Ed Schultz got suspended for calling Laura Ingraham a slut. Yeah, I'd like to see Christie put a hot poker to Obama's butt. Really? Would you like to see... Would you like to see him anally violated with that hot poker, Haley? And why is it that you think Chris Christie's the man to do it? Hot poker. Red hot, Haley, or white hot? You pick, Haley. Jim asking, do I sound like Haley Barbour of Mississippi? I was told I did. No, Jim, you do not sound like Haley Barbour of Mississippi, Stan. Not in the least. Holy mackerel. But see, it's okay for Haley Barbour to make references to his slaveholding past. But if a Democrat makes reference to the big lie theory, well, by God, he's got to publicly apologize, and the Obama administration has to say, well, that has no place in the debate and discourse, even if it does. Like our old buddy Bart Kopp has said so many times, it gets so frustrating being a member of a party that won't fight back. Jack in Shreveport says, I can't recall who said it, but somewhere back a while back, someone said they would break Obama. Break him. Yeah. A minute past the hour as we enter this third hour of the program, and I will add that thus far, the only individual stepping up to help out in, you know, the $100 or so we need to raise every evening has been our buddy Brandon. Your help is badly needed. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, and the snail mail address is there under the tab Contribute. Remember, every month that we meet our monthly fundraising goal, we get an extra $100 from our buddy Scott in Sweden as part of the Beat the Swede Challenge. It's hard to beat the Swede when we don't stay on track. And Brandon needs a little help. Brandon needs a little comradeship along the way. Thank you very much, Brandon. Thank you. And we will go on back to the phones. Your calls are as welcome as can be. Jump right in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Are you speaking to me, sir?
I'm speaking to you, Bill.
All right. You guys, boy, you and Jim had me going there. Some things always bring out some historic situation. You know, these IUDs, these people are hurt by the concussion effect of these weapons. You know.
Right.
And I'll take you back to Gettysburg. The Confederate sharpshooters were operating out of that Devil's Den rocky area and picking off cannoneers, which is part of the business. And the cannons cut loose on those guys amongst the rocks. And two or three, have made comments that these men that were found down there had not a mark on them. It was a concussion.
Right.
Of a cannon. And that was 1863, so this isn't anything new. It's been around for a while, unfortunately. And then a good joke was, a good laugh is Jerry Brown took offense at Christie and challenged him to a foot race, sit-ups, and chin-ups.
I saw that, and I didn't see any response from Chris Christie Cream.
Well, I was wondering, for every chin-up, does Christie get credit for four chin-ups? Every time he does it.
Oh, Bill will be here all week. Try the veal.
I'm a sick son of a...
He gets credit for every chin he gets past the bar.
Yeah. This idea of, Bob, Mormons in this country, when the guy found those mystical tablets in what, Reformed Egyptian language?
Yes, Reformed Egyptian.
Yes. They got chased around the country.
Well, you know that Joseph Smith has an arrest record, that the Mormon prophets and 32nd degree noble lumpkins and so forth have denied is real. But yes, he was arrested for running con scams. And at one point, he even admitted to his father-in-law that he would reform his wicked ways and stop running his scams. He was selling, among other things, treasure maps to the credulous farmers of upstate New York.
Oh, boy, yeah.
He'd say, I got these here rocks, and they're seeing stones, and I look into my hat, and they'll tell me where the treasure is on your farm, but I need you to pay me first.
Yep.
And then, of course, he would absent himself from the area, but it did catch up with him.
Well, I often wondered, because I know they were here in northeastern Ohio, out in Lake County area. They had a temple that burned, and they went to Amana, Iowa, I believe, and they were in Missouri, and from Missouri they finally lit out for an area where there was no
to wit, Ute,
Well, they went to Nauvoo, Illinois, and then Missouri. You know, the Mormons have declared that the second coming of Christ will not happen in Jerusalem, but will in fact happen in Missouri.
Oh.
And considering how many careers have been resurrected in Branson, that doesn't surprise me at all, Bill.
You're a sick man too. Yeah, that's
how work
I often thought that maybe it was the fact that they proselytize a lot, which means they might have been taking members away from some other church, and you know, taking money away from somebody else leads to bad feelings. You know, it's why is it that the biggest thing on cable TV in the beginning were professional wrestlers and TV evangelists? Are they both the same cut of bolt of cloth, actors? And
well, you know, a hustle is a hustle is a hustle, yeah. Bill.
Yep. So you guys get me going, and I can't help but laugh in a way. You raised a point last night that was it's tough if you're a Civil War buff. You know, the Horace Greeley School, Let Our Erring Sisters Go.
Yes.
I believe that's attributed to him. And sometimes when I see the rise of these red states, I just wonder what is with the working class people. I know they're not bad people. I know they're not stupid. I just don't get it.
I think the most fundamental flaw is to assume that this is somehow a problem that is limited to the South.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, it's a function of, and my brain begins to tie itself in knots when I even think about addressing this question, because it is complicated, Bill.
Yeah.
One, there is the possibility that some folks out there have different value sets, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it is more important to some people to have their children taught that Adam and Eve rode a dinosaur to church and God gave them the Remington bolt-action rifle so that they could hunt the dinosaurs and kill the homosexuals.
Mm.
Maybe that really is part of their value system.
Yeah.
And that's more than plenty frightening. But there are other things at play as well. And racism is certainly part of it, and has been since Barack Obama announced his candidacy.
Well, I've got several friends up here who, have no business. When I look at their lives, I said some of these guys should be dodging the law for this, that, or the other thing, and just because of a person's skin color or beliefs. That shouldn't be a reason to have to dodge the law. But some of these buddies of mine have pulled stunts that were illegal as hell. And God knows they... I mean, it wasn't... Why was it illegal? Because Harry Anslinger and company got after reefer in the 1930s. Probably to protect the makers of liquor, you know.
Well, also, and later on, to protect the rise of the hydrocarbon-based fiber industry.
Yes, yes.
There were massive plantations in the South, you know, in the non-cotton belt, non-tobacco South, and they were hemp plantations. I will never forget being told the story of a plantation in South Central Tennessee called Rattle and Snap, named after an old gambling game. I don't even know if the rules are still known, but that plantation changed hands on a game of Rattle and Snap, and thus it was forever named. Okay? And it was not a cotton plantation, it was not a tobacco plantation, it was a hemp plantation, and the hemp fibers that it provided made rope for the United States military and the United States Army and the United States Navy. And the Navy in particular needed a lot of rope.
Oh, yeah, those old ships.
And so, part of the ban on the growing of hemp stood to massively benefit the hydrocarbon fibers industry.
Well, I think DuPont is involved in that kind of stuff, too, with the chemical.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, it's that famous scene from The Graduate where the guy pulls Dustin Hoffman aside and said, son, I've only got one word for you. Plastics.
Yeah. It just, it seems to feed, you know, I finally get down with people saying, well, just write two words in a circular pattern. Money and power. And that's what it's about.
And just draw arrows between both words.
Yep. That's what it seems to be all about when push comes to whatever. I just finished a study of the Okinawa campaign, and the Japanese military were throwing these young kids in God knows whatever kind of plane they could throw them at, you know, at the picket line of destroyers and such off the coast of Okinawa. The slaughter amongst the Japanese was immense. They were, hey, Bob, at one point they were using biplanes. And the biplanes were a pain in the butt because the radar had a hard time picking them up. All wood, you know.
Right.
But, and that's the problem is, when we come to the time of the year when we commemorate the atomic bombing, it's, you go back and you look at some of the things that Japanese militarists did all over Asia. Because it wasn't a racial bias amongst them, it was a nationalist bias. And, you know, the military was running that nation. And what scares me is we don't want to see our military go this way. We were taught differently in during the Second World War. The American military was not that way. But nowadays you begin to wonder. You see things going on in here and there and... And since the end of World War II, where our military has stuck their noses in, and right behind them were the commercial people, the people who made money off the following. Because the Japanese military, when they went into Manchuria in the 1930s, Manchuria was loaded with two things, coal and iron ore.
And both of which come in very handy in wartime situations.
Well, Japanese were a manufacturing nation, such as same as England, island nation, and England didn't have a lot of iron ore. And the Japanese wanted the Dutch East Indies for the oil that they didn't have. And basically, in some respects, they were following what our ancestors in this country did as they spread across the continent, pushing the Native Americans to wherever they could push them to. So I can't, you know, how do you make a judgment call on this, all this different crazy, bizarre, violent behavior? It just, it boggles the mind after a while, and you say, well, let me find a hole somewhere and, you know.
Crawl in it.
Yeah, and he gets
away. Well, you know, William just wrote in with something, with somewhat of a similar sentiment, Bill. William said, I thought Clinton was a good... He said, this entire election makes me ill. And the reason I keep talking about that topic is because I want people to understand that they are being manipulated. You know, it's one thing to get a robocall and say, I ain't never going to vote for him, and, you know, hang up.
Yeah.
No matter how many times these putrid punks call you per day. But... It is another thing when your very will to participate in the franchise is being challenged. And that's what's happening with all of this. And yes, even the lesser of two evils argument is a Republican tool and a Republican trick. So when William sends an email whose subject line is, this entire election makes me ill, and says, I thought Clinton was a good pick, yet he helped get us where we are today. Kerry, who I voted for, ran off and didn't count all the votes. The entire Republican bunch are complete liars. I haven't heard much from the Democrats yet, even though they've not fixed much at all. I have no idea who can fix the mess we're in now. It all seems to have gone to hell. It's all global now and endless wars, and I just can't imagine how this will end well at close to 64. I may not be here to see it, says William. I just remember a time many years ago, he says in closing, where people were not asking what party you voted for or what religion you were. Things were never perfect, yet it seemed like a more sane world long ago, where we did advance for the better. It just didn't last, and it's all due to political lies and broken promises. And I understand every bit of that frustration, Bill, but you know, there's something else at work in here, and that is this. The right wing ramped up its poison.
Yeah.
Beginning with Brown versus Board of Education. At that moment, when there began to be manifestations that there might be some sort of political equality, some sort of equality of citizenship for persons of color in this country, the right wing decided that it had to kill it all.
Yeah, that's when the jobs, the job that the young kid, black kid, poor white kid should get a job in a factory. And if he produced, or she, some jobs, I worked in some work, and I was a member of the garment workers union when I was still in high school, making sweaters, repairing knitting machines. I had a book called The Invisible Hand, which traces the rise of the right wing in the Republican Party, and they started with the one of my favorite groups, the Liberty League, back in the 30s.
Right, and that's a forerunner to the John Birch Society and the rest of that filthy outfit.
So I just, you say you do the best you can, and William at 64, I'm 5 years ahead of you, so I can understand totally how you feel. We're leaving people behind. We're leaving families behind. And I don't know if you saw that post that I sent you, a young lady that I...
Yeah, I did. I did.
Boy, did that... We've established an email contact, and you talk about having your heart sliced. No, I mean, nobody has ever said that many nice things about me, except for my mother, maybe, you know. That was on a good day, when my first comment to a buddy of mine was, it's like being at a funeral where you're listening to the eulogy, and you keep listening, and you have to go out and check the name on the door. You know, you make sure you're in the right place. Because this eulogy doesn't sound anything like the guy you came for the visitation. You knew him too well. This can't be the same guy.
Right.
You hit it on the nose, and I come back to a guy like Dennis, who I was lucky enough to meet when he was a young kid, and we both worked in the same joint. And and you know how much hatred there was for him on radio around here?
No.
Some of these big mouth afternoon drive time guy, and he's on, of course, the same network that carries Limbaugh and Beck. You know, I think it's called the Reversible White Jacket Network. Right? Anyway, I'll let you go, but you guys stir up stuff which is so true. That's all I can say, and hang in.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you very kindly. Good to hear from you.
Take care.
Bye now. Our buddy Bill from Cleveland, known and loved by many as Mr. Stress. He is a bluesman extraordinaire. Ron in Raleigh writing in with a note on hemp. He says, the original impetus for the criminalization of hemp was William Randolph Hearst, who was trying to protect his timber holdings. In order to do that, he added in a little racism with the claim that marijuana would cause a Negro to look a white man in the eye and cause him to attack and ravage the white women. He speaks true. Note in from Kate, telling me to keep at it as far as the fundraising is concerned. Folks need to know, item by item, phone bills, power bills, internet bills, equipment bills. Yeah, that's what this does. That's what this takes care of. And frankly, the ability of us here to make up shortfalls is over. That's how dire it is every month, and we need to bring in something approaching between $100 and $140 a night. And we are at $45 for this evening. Brandon got a little bit of help. Thank you very, very kindly for those of you who did. Kate adds with a note to Jim, please, Jim, in no way do you sound like anyone from Mississippi. You have that elegant Carolina music in your language. For example, the way you say out.
And thanks for your contributions to the conversations, Jim, especially your knowledge of old films. Get ready for your close-up, says Kate. Jim noting that Bush 41, bailout Bush, that his parachute ropes were still made of hemp as far as up into World War II. So we are at 20 minutes past the hour, about, call it 35 minutes or so of conversation, potential conversation remaining in the program if you want to get involved. 877-443-2366 is the number, as is 304-658-3333 if you don't need us to carry the toll-free freight. If you... You know, I said earlier that what the Republican that the Republicans are constantly engaged in this act of psychological and propagandistic transference. And here's another example of it. How many times have you heard a Republican say, "Well, we've got to get the debt under control, or we're going to turn into Greece"? Well, here's a hint. They'd like for us to turn into Greece. They're willing to crash the entire economy. They'd like to crash the entire economy. That is what they have been doing for the last 4 years. And toward what end? Well, RT, Russian television, RT with a story out today, headline: leaked, Troika requires 6-day working week in Greece. Yeah, good question, onward to dystopia. Where are those people who were so concerned about the debt during the Bush and Cheney years? They were as silent as the tomb. This article reporting, a leaked email sent to the Greek Ministries of Finance and Labor from the Troika says Greek private sector workers should work 6 days a week and longer hours. The letter, which was published on August 31st, shows that the Troika expects the Labor Ministry to implement a number of other new measures. They include reducing the notice period before firing a worker and cutting certain severance packages by 50% by giving employers the right to reduce workers' time in service. Restrictions on overtime are also expected to come into effect. It also wants a dismantling of the Labor Inspectorate, which is the public service that is responsible for implementing labor law. So it's not only about making the labor market more flexible. That came from Panagiotis Soitras from the University of the Aegean. The email, the RT reports, was sent ahead of meetings between Prime Minister Antonis Samaras and his coalition partners, the PASOK Socialists of Evangelos Venizelos. You gotta give me time. You gotta be a little forbearing with me here on my pronunciation of Greek names. I apologize. And the Democratic Left of Foitis Kouvelis, according to the financial newspaper Immersia. I think we're going to see, Soitiris said, I think we're going to see a total dismantling of labor law, which would possibly even include a 7-day work week. It's also interesting that they are trying to reduce the number of hours between shifts to only 11 hours, so their idea is that an employer can call up an employee at any time, giving the employee no stability of working hours. This, oh my God, if you sent this to the Republican Party, they would have to change their shorts. This is their dream. A working class that, to quote the little tune that I played last night by Jimmy Buffett, written by Mac McAnally, the dream of the Republican Party is to take the working class and make them capable of nothing but eating, excreting, and dying when they're not working. A 6-day work week in Greece. In return for what? For staying in the Euro Club? It's a hell of a bargain. I'm guessing there's no 6 or 7 day work week for bankers in Greece. Bank executives.
Oh, hell no. That is for the peons. That is for the villains. That is for the vassals. That is for the serfs. Already, the average Greek employee works 2,017 hours per year, and that's more than any other European country. And the money boys want more. And the Republicans say, can we have some of that? Because, you know, if you can't ever do anything but work, you're sure not going to be out there raising any rabble, or and you'll probably be too damn scared to make any noise. Indeed. They want it. They want it. They want it. Everybody, come on. They want it all. Really? Really? Greece? The cradle of Christianity? The bastion of the Orthodox Church, and they won't even let them off a day to go to church? A 7-day work week? Maybe Haley Barbour would like to take a hot poker to their butts, too. Jim extending thanks to Kate, and Mark writing in saying thank you, Jim, for your reasonable service, from fellow veteran Mark. Ron writing in, he says, I don't know if you've mentioned it, Bob, but I would like to note the passing of Michael Clark Duncan from a heart attack at the too young age of 54. A man who was as big as his not fully tapped talent. I saw that yesterday, and yeah, that was sad. I guess perhaps most well remembered for his role in The Green Mile. Ron and Raleigh also noting, I hate to tell you, Bob, but those work rules are already the law in North Carolina. I'm not lying. Yeah, yeah. If you work at Walmart and they say, you got to come in tomorrow, and you say, yeah, but it's my day off. Too bad. You don't come in tomorrow. You don't have a job. And there's not a damn thing to protect that worker. You know, because, well, yeah, unions, communists. Right? Sure. Yeah, it reminds me of this from the great John Sayles movie. Make one.
I'm talking about. Jesus. I can't hear you.
Jesus.
I still can't hear you.
Jesus
Christ our Lord. Do you know his name?
Have
you seen his glory? Have you felt the warming comfort of his precious love? Praise Jesus. Praise his holy name. Praise his blessed spirit. Praise his everlasting love. Jesus Christ our Lord. Listen to me now. Listen to me. The Prince of Darkness is upon the lion. Now in the Bible, his name is Beelzebub, Lord of the Flies. Right now on earth today, his name is Bolshevik, Socialist, Communist, Union Man, Lord of Untruth, Sower of evil seed, enemy of all that is good and pure, and this creature walks among us.
By God, you know what that sounds like? That sounds like that's a movie about something that happened in 1920, but it sounds a hell of a lot like a sound clip from last week in Tampa, doesn't it? That hateful woman from South Carolina talking about the union boss thugs. God almighty. Jim saying, thanks, Mark, and God bless, and my thanks for your service as well. Jim also noted that the Republicans would love to repeal the Fair Labor Standards Act at all costs. Damn straight. And remember, we've got a Supreme Court to watch here. Let's not get all worked up about the presidential election, as tempting as it may be. There's a court to watch. Because evil is on the face of the land, and it has the face of a rat. Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia. Rats. First Monday in October begins the new term, and there's a lot of speculation that one of the first things we'll see, or one of the things we can expect out of this term, is to see the rats on the Supreme Court. Just in time for the election. Vitiate, invalidate, and overturn the Voting Rights Act of 1965 that was occasioned by Bloody Sunday at the foot of the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. They're after labor, they're after women, they're after people of color, and they aim to devastate the working class in this country. And they're still on the whole women's insides thing. Not Todd Akin anymore. No, now it's Roscoe Bartlett. A crusty old curmudgeonly right-wing repig-licking from Maryland. Who fielded a question about abortion. Happened Thursday past. At a town hall meeting. Yeah, I'm not going to read you the quote. I don't want anybody saying, well, he was doing his funny voices again. No, hell no.
Yes?
There's been a lot of talk in the news lately about one of your subjects, and so it seems to me to ask... You would support, I know the Republican platform and Governor Romney have slightly different views on abortion for rape victims. So I'd like you to clarify what your position is.
Oh, it's been the same for 20 years. I'm pro-life for the Section Security of Life and Mother Rape and Incest. I'm so avidly pro-life that I'm against affordable punishment. As far as being pro-life and pro-death, it's in that. Nobody ever asked me that question for about 8 years. And I was in debate over in Howard County. And Ben Cardin was there. And his opponent didn't show up. So I had my opponent and Ben Cardin close enough to town with me. And this question came up about capital punishment. And that ended the debate. I couldn't believe it. I'm a pretty conservative Republican. And, you know, I read two books in the past. One was, boy, that can I read 88 Men and 2 Women, The Warden Laws. These were the people executed in the Warden. And the other was One Man's Freedom, Every Man Includes. And in each of those books, there was a big long chapter on corporal punishment and was it in his career. And I know of no professional who believes it is.
Okay, I'm having a little bit of a problem here. And it's not, yeah, the audio is not the best. But Roscoe keeps going back and forth between corporal punishment and capital punishment. I'm not sure if he's against spanking or state-sponsored murder. Now, being against spanking in schools would probably play well
in a district that had a few liberals in it. We don't believe children should go to school to be beaten. And capital punishment would being against capital punishment probably play well too. But I'm not going to subject you to the rest of it. I'm just going to tell you what he said instead, because the audio is dodgy. I can listen to it here, and I never know how it's going to behave until I see the audio on the VU meter of the streaming software going out. It looks okay on the VU meter over here. It don't look so good over there. But he went on in this rambling way that you heard here. And eventually he got around to abortion. He said, oh, life of the mother. Exception of the life of the mother. Rape and incest. Yeah, I've always, that's a mantra, you know. I've said it so often it just spills out. If you really, there are very few pregnancies as a result of rape, fortunately, and incest compared to the usual abortion, which is, what is the percentage of abortions for rape? It's tiny. It's tiny. Tiny percentage. In terms of percentage of pregnancies, percentage of abortions for rape is compared to overall abortions, it's a tiny, tiny percentage. Most abortions are for what purpose? They just don't want to have a baby. The second reason for abortion is you'd like a boy and it's a girl or vice versa, and I know a lot of people are opposed to abortion who are pro-choice. Huh? Yeah, they're still at it. I don't understand what it is about women's insides that get these folks to damn head up, but they're there. They are sure there. And it keeps popping up and keeps popping up and keeps popping up, won't go away. I mean, there's, for instance, there's a guy running for Senate in North Dakota. Hi, Patty. Hi, Bob. There's a guy running for Senate in North Dakota by the name of Representative Rick Berg. He, in the past, supported a bill in North Dakota that would actually imprison a woman up to and including life without parole if she was found guilty of obtaining an abortion. It was 2007, and a teensy-tiny little handful of weirdos in the state house in North Dakota supported a new section to Chapter 12.1-16 of the North Dakota Century Code. It read as follows. Intentional termination of human life, preborn children. Preborn children. Dr. Mr. Orwell... A person is guilty of a class AA felony if the person intentionally destroys or terminates the life of a preborn child. A person that knowingly administers to, prescribes for, procures for, or sells to any pregnant individual. I think in that moment we can say female. Pretty sure. Any pregnant individual, but see, we can't say woman, because that would accord them human status. We'll call them an individual. Because, you know, a dog can be an individual. A squirrel can be an individual. A worm can be an individual. Right? Or sells to any pregnant individual any medicine, drug, device, or other substance with the specific intent of causing or abetting the termination of a preborn child is guilty of a class AA felony. A person that intentionally or knowingly aids, abets, facilitates, solicits, or incites a person to intentionally destroy or terminate the life of a preborn child is guilty of a class C felony. For purposes of this section, preborn child includes a human being from the moment of fertilization until the moment of birth. Here's the funny thing. This jackass, this Berg, ran out and tried to put as much distance as he could between him and Todd Akin. In other words, he lied. Because lying is what, to paraphrase A.A. Milne's Tigger, lying is what Republicans do best. Jiminy.
But they're all... All the... There are no pro-life Republicans... I mean, pro-choice Republicans. You cannot be a Republican and be pro-choice. The asylum has been taken over by its patients. They care more about little fetuses and snowflake babies than they do the ones that are already here or on the way. Otherwise, they would have long since signed on, and we would have had passed by now the AIC Act, H.R. 5959. Because we know that women pregnant in mountaintop removal communities have shockingly higher rates of birth defects than women who don't live near such hell holes or hilltops. God. In that litany, that list of people, I noted that the Republicans don't care much for. Bill wrote back to say, yeah, and they don't like the old much either. And well, that's the truth. And they're even willing to try to keep old folks from voting. Stunning story coming out of Pennsylvania. You know, the Pennsylvania voter ID law is likely to prevent something on the order of 750,000 citizens of that state from being able to vote. One of them was very nearly Alice Carlson. Alice Carlson has to get around on a walker. But under the circumstances, I think it's mighty fine that she does. Alice Carlson used to be the secretary of the New York City Public Schools, and she lives in Pennsylvania now. She had to make her way to the Pennsylvania Department of Motor Vehicles in order to get a new voter ID. They told her she couldn't have one when she went to the Pennsylvania Department of Motor Vehicles. Why? Because Alice Carlson was born in 1907. That makes her 105 years old. And she's been voting just about as long as women have been allowed to in this country. She would have been first eligible in 1928. She would only have missed a few elections in which women had been allowed to vote in the first place. Why was she not allowed to vote? She was told at the Pennsylvania Department of Motor Vehicles that, well, see, Ms. Carlson, our computer system can't recognize ages above 104. Okay, please, I got to have some help here. Computer geniuses in the audience. Why that number? I mean, I understand, you know, 16, 32, 64, 128, you know, thing, right, 104?
just because some programmer said, ah, you know, I mean, what's the chance? 104 will be fine. I mean, we might get a 100-year-old coming in here to try. Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. The computer doesn't recognize anybody who's older than 104, so the computer doesn't think you need to vote anyway. Fortunately, she had gotten a ride to the Pennsylvania DMV with State Representative Mario Scavello. It took 90 minutes of Ms. Carlson's life, which at 105 you can get pretty damn jealous of having wasted. It took 90 minutes of a 105-year-old lady's life. It took Representative Mario Scavello raising hell, after which Pennsylvania Department of Motor Vehicles officials said, all right, all right, all right, we'll give her a picture ID, just get her over there and get her to sit down, and we'll get so she can go and vote, for God's sake. Just get her out of here. Okay, that part was radio theater. But you know that something similar went on behind closed doors. Why me, Lord? Why do I have to be the guy sitting in the office when the 105-year-old comes through wanting to vote? Don't they understand we don't want them to vote? If we wanted them to vote, we'd make voting easy. All of this, of course, if you follow Brad Friedman, our good friend, over at bradblog.com, all of this, of course, being done on the pretext of preventing voter fraud. Because, you know, people, yeah, those liberals, those progressive people, those pinko commies supporting that socialist Muslim. They'll just come back and vote and vote and vote and vote and vote over and over again. Because they're like that. They want to turn our country over to the Muslim Kenyan socialists, and next thing you know, the UN Agenda 21 forces will be invading Lubbock, Texas. And we gotta stop them right here in Pennsylvania. Yeah, it's all about stopping voter fraud, but the state of Pennsylvania, is it the Commonwealth? Do I have to say Commonwealth? I can't remember. They've admitted, though, quote, no investigations or prosecutions of in-person voter fraud in Pennsylvania exist. State of Pennsylvania has also admitted they do not have direct personal knowledge of any such investigations or prosecutions in other states. Voters are 39 times more likely to be struck by lightning than commit voter fraud at the polls. They are 3,500 times more likely to report an encounter with a UFO than commit in-person voter fraud at the polls. So one out of 750,000 of the citizens of the state of Pennsylvania who were disenfranchised by this filthy piece of right-wing garbage will vote. What about the other 749,999? I am, as they say, just asking. Ron and Raleigh querying, but Bob, but the judge that okayed the Pennsylvania voter law said it would be easy to get an ID. Well, it's easy enough. It's easy enough, Ron. Assuming you're not 105. If you're 103 and a half, you just toddle right up there and get your voter ID card, and it's easy. I don't reckon I'll be seeing 105. But I can tell you, if I did, my willingness to put up with bullshit would have ended at about age 103 or 4. Because if you make it to 105, you earn the right to look at anybody who wastes so much as an iota of your precious time on this planet and say, quit killing me. I don't have a lot of time left and you're wasting it. Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. The computer system doesn't recognize anyone older than 104. That's part of that whole fix we put in during the great big crisis for the millennium computer crash that didn't happen. F me running. See, yeah, you guys are like me in the chat room. Dwayne, F that. I reached 75. I ain't taking any crap. Then it occurred to Lottie, you know, if you're over 100, life in prison for killing somebody ain't that long. Beautiful. By the way, with only a few minutes to go in the program, I can tell you that our buddy David, one of our Davids, said... Did you see what I did there? With the smiley face icon? Iron Maiden rocks better than your constitution. His contribution was a series of sixes. Robert in Australia noting, early computers used one digit for the year due to storage limitations. Then they had to have two digits once you got past a decade. In the mid-90s, I was working on Y2K, basically updating all the software to four digits for the year. Most software should be good up until the year 9999. See, that's what I mean. I don't get the 104 part. That seems rather, and this is a term from out in the law, arbitrary and capricious. I guess the 103-year-old should just be damned well grateful. Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, or DMV, or who the hell ever, have, by the way, put in place a system whereby folks who are 104 can fill out some paperwork. Yeah. Paperwork. For the 104-year-olds. You know what? If a 104-year-old comes in to get a voter ID that they shouldn't have to show in the first place because they've spent a lifetime of sweat and blood and determination and patriotism exercising the franchise, but if a 104-year-old comes into your office, there should be a balloon drop ready. There should be cake. There should be popping champagne corks. But the right wing in this country, as Bill said a little bit ago, doesn't think very much of old people either. William writing in says, my wife's 66. She had no trouble getting a photo ID in 1985, and it expired in 1989, so she needed a new one. Yet the California DMV told her she needed a certified birth certificate because even though on her expired photo ID there's a number, yet she was told they did not put those in their new computer system, so to get one she needs me and one other person that knows her to go get a notary public to certify her, and now we don't know another person in the state that knows her. And that's California. Because, well... Emma Goldman said if voting worked, they'd make it illegal. Apparently it was working. So now they're making it
illegal.
And we are just a scant $25 or so from finishing the fundraising for tonight, which will keep us above the waterline as we move through the month of September. Thank you, everyone, for keeping this going. It is humbling and inspiring and is unlike anything I've ever experienced in my life. Maybe someday this will be proof that there was freedom of speech in the United States and that it was not all controlled by the six corporations that run the for-profit media. Thank you. Time to get out of here. Rick Smith is on the way. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. You with your kind contributions of your finances, your ideas, your time, your participation in the chat room, your email, your phone calls. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to Agnes. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. None of this happens without WhiteRoseSociety.org. Another reminder, a PRISM West Virginia chat coming this Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. They need your help. And it doesn't cost just a heck of a lot to get one of the coolest t-shirts on planet Earth, Save the Endangered Hillbilly, from Coal River Mountain Watch. You can see it there on the crmw.net webpage. And, of course, acact.org. If we're going to save Appalachia and the people of Appalachia, we're going to have to do it. It will be an act of determination. acact.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.